Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
You are listening to the NHRD podcast. NHRD, a national HRD network, India's largest network for HR professionals. This episode is brought to you by Zing HR.
Thank you for joining us on the NHRD podcast. We are delighted to bring you someone whose experiences we believe are going to really add a different color and perspective to how you view your hiring, your talent management needs. In fact, this is an organization that I think everyone was talking about, but because that moment really went viral for all of us folks who follow Shark Tank in India. The reason this really stood out in Shark Tank India history is because they went in with a certain thing, the sharks agreed to it, and they actually ended up rejecting the offer. How many people actually have the luxury of doing that? That really speaks for resolve and focus in exactly what you want your organization to be, what you consider, or what meaning you ascribe to the word value. But then we don't really know what it means. But here is a person who, through his organization, Unstop, he is the founder and CEO, Ankit Agarwal is who I'm talking about, has figured out what value really means when it comes to bridging different stakeholders in India's talent story. Thank you so much, Ankit, for joining us on the NHRD podcast. We do believe this is a high point for us on this episode. Welcome to the show. How are you today?
All good, Sheetal. Thank you so much for inviting me. Looking forward to the discussion. And yeah, I think just to get some numbers straight, Unstop today is sitting at 30 million users, and we are India's largest engagement and hiring platform.
Yeah. And if you were to really explain that to an 8-year-old, not that there is any 8-year-old who's listening to our podcast right now, but you never know, right, nowadays. They start early, as they say. How would you explain what the value proposition of Unstop is all about? You said that, but you said that in a way you'd say to older people like, you know, me, for example, but simplified.
I would say you're just connecting the dots between the employers and the talent in the most meaningful way possible. Right. That's a one-liner explanation. Yeah. Let me give you an example of it. If there is a female coder sitting in tier 3 city at a tier 4 institute, the biggest product companies like Amazon, Walmart, Adobe, Reliance, Starters, they don't go to those campuses. What we are enabling is we are giving a chance to that particular talent, any city, any college, to showcase their skills and be part of their dream employers.
Right.
And that's what the dots we are connecting, which is enabling even employers to hire the best talent sitting anywhere across the India and possibly across the globe. That's it.
And that also, you know, brings me to the very first question. It's about data. And I think there was this one line that became very popular many years ago, right? Data is a new oil. And now in this current geopolitical climate, it really is, I think, taken on a different meaning altogether. And you, you know, given the 30 plus million folks that you have sort of on your platform as users, you have access to insight via data that is probably unmatched in many ways. And you, who better than you to tell us how the hiring landscape seems to have changed in the last few years? How would you say, or what would you say are the key ways in which we need to look at things differently, because things are, boss, not what you thought they were?
No, I think a good question to start off. We recently released a report, Unstuck Talent Report 2026. 88% of the HRs who participated in the survey were hiring. Okay. But when we looked at data from the students' lens point of view, 85% of the students were unplaced. Now, when you look at it, the first thing that comes to our mind is that there is a skills gap.
Right.
Because of which the unplacement rates. Mm-hmm. If we dive deeper, I would say skill gap is still the number third priority. The number two reasons for this is, one is access, right? Are companies able to access the right talent, not the top talent, but the right talent for them in a meaningful manner? Which is one of the biggest problems that we believe that we need to solve for. Because if you're hiring, you need to hire the right talent, not just the top talent, right? And there is a difference between the right talent and the top talent, which we discuss later, right? The second aspect is essentially, how do you evaluate that particular candidate or a talent, whether early talent or laterals, based on the skills you need?
Right.
I think those are also outdated, and whether I can be sure, right? And I'll give you just one example. One of the largest product companies who sort of are dream employers, without taking name of any company, they are paying 30 lakhs per annum to a fresher, to a coder, okay, in India. Their basic problem when I stepped into the room and we were doing a workshop for them was that we are not sure if we are hiring the best coder in India, even after spending 30 lakhs per annum as your starting salary, right? We dived into all the humongous data sets that they had. We did the analysis and we got to know that the main problem is that they are not reaching out to all coders in India, right? And they were reaching out to thousands, not a small number.
Right.
But India has a problem, not a problem, but a positive element where we are sitting at millions of coders. Are you able to even reach out to millions? Because then you'll be sure that you are hiring the best if you have reached out, if they have applied and they have gone through the funnel. There is another problem that I think is coming into the picture, which is massive salary expectations mismatch, right? And that is from the candidates and the talent side, right? Students coming out of maybe tier 2, tier 3, tier 4. I mean, I don't want to call based on the tiers because they are very, very subjective.
Correct.
But they have salary expectations of the premier institutes because that's what they see on social media, on news, that, hey, they're getting 1 crore package. We are getting a 10 lakh package, right? And that also plays a role in how you're perceiving that industry, that company, and that job profile, because the package makes it glamorous rather than the work. And that's the first thing, right? Now the things are changing where people are going after and really understanding which industry, company, and job profile I should be working on,
right,
rather than the salary package.
Understood.
Right. And the last thing I would say is everybody is talking about AI readiness gap. Mm-hmm. Every company wants the talent to be AI ready. Mm. Okay. And they would want to test their AI fluency through some other mediums or so.
Right.
But one thing I want to highlight, they do not want them to use AI tools during the hiring process. So that's a paradox that possibly we need to solve for.
Yeah. And you're solving for it in, I have to say, extremely interesting ways. And maybe gamification is not quite the word, because your assessments are really a lot more than that, right? Somehow when I imagine it, I'm thinking it's not just about getting a score and then having that score, you know, published somewhere where an employer is saying, ha, this is like a high scorer, so in you go. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, what are these tools, for the want of a better word, that you're using, and how does it really work, and how does it really help an employer and also, I'm sure, the potential employee, right, at some point.
Yeah. No, I think one thing, let's be very, very clear about, the process matters, right? And sometimes more than the outcome. And people don't really understand the difference between the process and the outcome. I talked about the skill gap, right?
Right.
Now, people do not want to just look at a skill in the resume. They want to look at proof of work, right? One, let's say a company runs a hackathon, right? It is basically one, through that hackathon, they are enabling themselves to reach out to anybody, any student, any college, any talent, any stream, right? Doesn't really matter, right? Once they participate in a, let's say, a 24-hour or a 48-hour hackathon, they will be able to see that no interview can surface, right? They'll be able to see how that talent is responding in those hours, right? When they hit the wall, right? How do they do the pivot while they're given more data, right? How do they solve for that problem that they didn't anticipate, right? My biggest fear today is I don't know what I don't know. And there will be a lot of those points that come in when they are actually given those scenarios. They will be able to figure out those approaches for things that they don't know, right? Whether they quit, whether they work their way out, right? And that's the genuine behavior that everybody wants to see, how that person performs under pressure. And those environments basically predict your learning agility, your pressure management, and your maybe collaboration styles and common sense, right? And those are the things that differentiates a talent vis-a-vis others if they have the technical skills intact, right? And technical skills can easily be evaluated through assessments, through maybe simulation games, which are again gamified to put them into real world scenarios. So I think the outcome might be that this person has won that hackathon, and that might be maybe 10 or 20 out of maybe thousands.
Right.
But the process tells that, hey, these are all the 100 that performed really well. They may not have got to that winning idea, but these are the ones, as a founder, as in a startup, I really want to know how they navigate themselves through that process,
right,
irrespective of the outcome.
So I want to come to this point about the upcoming workforce. What do they really want, Ankit? I mean, you've addressed some of it, but what is the one thing that they are looking for in organizations, in potential employers? And is there any way that your solutions help them refine who they want to be hired by?
This generation and the young employees, and that's why the dividend that we are sitting on is very, very critical. They are actually not that confused, right? They know, or maybe they're more clearer than our generation in terms of meaningful work, in terms of faster growth trajectories, and possibly career and psychological safety, right? Now, the order of these aspects may be different and may depend on the person, the priorities that they may have, but these things do come on and off, right? The first 90 days are very, very critical, right? The employers, many a times, when they speak to the talent and all, or maybe on their social media, they always advertise the culture, the mentorship, the impact that they do and all, right? And once somebody gets in, if they get bureaucracy, right, unclear ownership, manager is not training them or is not somebody whom they can look up to, right, that creates a disconnect, right? And nowadays in this generation, if you're not able to manage the right aspirations or growth trajectories of that particular talent,
right,
now the young people won't stay with you for a lot longer time. In our, again, if I go back to the same report, 80% early talent is looking at shifting if they are not getting that growth. And they are even looking at shifting for better learning opportunities, even if they don't get salary growth. How we are helping? I think we need to ensure, and we did a study with one of our employers, again, can't name them. Their attrition rates used to be in higher double digits, okay? And when we dived into the analysis, again, I'm coming back to the top talent versus the right talent. And that is true for all the employers today, right? If they are giving an assessment to any category, laterals, early talent, always they want to hire the top 10 guys who have performed well in that assessment. Top 10 guys, right? And when we look at premier talent, now the premier talent is not defined by the college or their salary, right? The premier talent is defined by the skills that they have and how they are going deeper into that, right? Now, they were hiring the top guys from the premier institutes and all of that, right? But when we dived into, those were the real guys who were leaving them.
Right.
Because the company was not able to do the aspirations matching, right? Now, in our tool, we want to do the meaningful connects, right? So let's say product companies versus services companies, right? Now, when we did the analysis for the same company, the people who were sticking around performed 80 to 85% in those very funnel assessments rather than 90% plus. And that was very, very, everybody who scored more than 90, 80% of them left. Whereas the people who scored between 80 to 90, 80% of them didn't leave. Then the answer is that possibly that's where your hiring funnel should be, that you should be double clicking on the next set, which is 80 to 90 rather than 90% plus, right? And you need to hire the person for whom your industry, your company, and your package is aspirational, not the talent who is aspirational for you as a company, right? Because as a company, I would want the IAM guys, but I may not be able to retain them. And that's a clarity of thought that all the companies, the employers, and the HRs would want. So we are trying to solve for is that meaningful connects to figure out which kind of talent can be best suited for which kind of audience and how are we able to filter that out and connect the right dot for the right talent. And that's how we'll be able to make, right, as you said, the employers as well as the talent unstoppable.
Yeah. Suddenly I'm thinking, right, maybe this correct fitment that you've, the secret sauce that you've nailed could be very easily applied to matrimony. Are you thinking of another startup along the line? All these learnings are so useful. You should. I mean, look at us. We are a nation who...
That's tricky. That's very, very tricky. Very, very tricky.
Yeah,
I think people, how they behave in their courtship period and after marriage change.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's not very different. See, I'm going to bring everything back to you. Better be careful, Ankit, because right there to where you, because you know this.
I need to go home.
No, Yumshu, I have so many more questions. You have to answer them all. No, but this one's actually important because it's got to do with diversity. You yourself are a STEM student, a product of that, you know, academic rigor and ambition and desire. STEM pipelines for women, right, girls, it's pretty solid in the beginning. I mean, we just had all these CBSE results and a fair number of girls, you know, toppers here, there, 99.9%, this, that, astounding numbers. But when it comes to the actual talent pipeline funnel, it kind of dries up in the organizations. What is the issue? Where is the bottleneck really? Is it in the assessment stage? Is it in the at the point of the offer or somewhere else altogether?
Yeah. No, I think I'll give some stats, right? So in India, there are 40 to 42 million students who are pursuing some set of formal UG and PG education, right? Formalized.
Right.
And I was surprised out of that 42 million, 20 million are girls.
Yeah.
So effectively, there is a 50-50, almost 50-50 split, right, between the girls and the boys in terms of the formal education.
Right.
Where it starts deviating is if we dive deeper into, let's say, engineering cohorts, then it is much more towards males than females. And that percentage holds true whenever a company is going to hire from campuses or from that domain. And then that goes down to lateral hiring as well, where females might be. So I think, again, the problem stays the same. Are we able to reach out to even all, let's say, female coders, right? I specifically talked about it because the percentage is less, right? And I can basically say, and I've maintain this example at Shark Tank and others, and Walmart has been one of our clients who hire for diversity.
Right.
They wanted to hire female coders earlier. They were looking at hiring from a set of campuses, but they were not able to have their mandated numbers, which is the problem that you spoke about.
Yeah.
And then they started doing that gamified engagement through a hackathon called Coders, right? And you won't believe 100,000 female coders applied to be part of Walmart, right? And eventually they were able to hire more than what they intended to because of the top of the funnel was solved for. If we are able to solve top of the funnel, the other things automatically get solved for, right? And when we say diversity, I would rather do a more broader audience. I know you spoke about females.
Right.
Many a times now, diversity can be gender related, females, LGBTQ and all. And then diversity also comes into the picture where they would want in the same team, there should be engineers, there should be MBAs, and there should be arts, commerce, humanities students as well, right? So, and that is true for all these segments per se.
Yeah. Is hiring very different for startups than it is for actually established, more mature companies?
I mean, I would say the core remains the same. For me, I think the difference possibly might be maybe tolerance in terms of ambiguity and uncertainty, right? And let me give you an example. Let's say when I hire for Unstock, right? The role that I'm hiring for itself may look completely different in 8 to 12 months, right? So I would want to handle for the person who can handle that ambiguity and can build without a playbook in hand, right? Because our playbook has never been there. And the best candidates, I think, are also looking at, and in my view, a corporate-y candidate is very, very different from a startup-y candidate. And that's the difference. There is nothing else, right? And I believe the startup-y candidate may find himself or herself confined in ways if they are going in larger organizations.
Right.
And similarly, a corporate guy who is doing phenomenally well there may not be able to survive in a startup environment because of the ambiguity and the intolerance. Right. So I think the core remains the same. It's just whom are you hiring for, and possibly the way the organization is structured is the difference.
Yeah.
And that's why if we basically look at all the HR leaders, and I try to tell all the HR leaders that you don't have to move as fast as a startup for every hire, right? But you really need to define and understand the JD, the role, just to ensure that are you hiring with the right signals, or are you tracking the right signals that work best for you? And that's why these two things will be very, very different.
So if there were one or two things you could tell these people who are sitting in the upper echelons of organizations that you see that they should also be seeing, saying, you know, can you just take 2 minutes to pay attention to these two, three things? What would those two, three things be?
The first thing would be the cost of wrong hire. But for me, I think in a startup, when I hire wrong, I'm taking my whole startup back by a few months because I'm not hiring with buffers in mind. And that might be same for startup and large organization if they are very, very running faster.
Right.
But that is one thing that people miss when they are hiring, and they don't look beyond that hired person.
Right.
The second is, and I think this is very, very underappreciated. Startup founders and the teams are sometimes forced to do those uncomfortable conversations that the large organizations are often have systems to do, right? So it's like a, let me go back to that example that you were saying, right? Marriage, right? So if there is not a match between both after a marriage, it is easier to basically call it off sooner than later, right? Those uncomfortable feelings between the manager and the person who has hired. And if everybody makes mistakes, right? And if we've made that mistakes, it is easier for us to take that call rather sooner in 3 to 6 months timeline rather than giving them the whole year. And I believe those uncomfortable conversations happen a lot easier in that startup environments rather than in a bigger companies, because then they have to go in for PITs, they have to give them months to prove themselves. And I think that also plays a role. And again, it gets tied to the cost of hire, because as a process, you divide that into a 6 months longer, a 12-month process, whereas a startup, we acknowledge it's a mistake and it's best for both the parties to part ways sooner rather than later. So I think those.
And here's where we get into, now I don't want to call it rapid fire round, because sometimes I've realized I don't want a rapid answer. And the person also doesn't want to necessarily give a rapid answer, but these are more like quick takes, okay? What is the skill that is consistently perhaps a little lacking, I don't want to say absent altogether, in high potential young hires right now, high potential?
It may not be high potential.
Okay.
It's for everybody. And I think maybe it starts from a school education. I call it common sense, right? Because everybody wants to hire for common sense. And I divide that common sense into three parts. Very, very easy, right? First, are you able to understand and comprehend the problem? The second is, are you able to then figure out and analyze that problem and define a solution to that? And third is, are you able to articulate and communicate that solution to the stakeholder?
Right.
Yeah. Combination of these three is nothing but common sense. And I believe this is exactly what I think we are missing in our college education, in our school education. We are teaching them the fundamentals, the technical stuff. But more importantly, common sense is the most undervalued part and not top.
What is your take on this whole, you know, AI is coming to take our jobs, and life in about few years is going to be very different from what you imagine it now?
Everybody needs to know that AI is a threat to the way they are working, not the jobs, but the way they are working, right? Mm-hmm. And if they won't mend their ways and figure out a better and efficient way of working using AI, it will become a threat to their jobs.
Hmm.
Right? So AI itself will take up your job, right? But if you're not able to do a meaningful upskill or build efficiencies, maybe create more value out of your job using AI,
right?
I think you'll be replaced by a person who's doing that lot faster than what you would anticipate. And that's the real threat of AI for jobs and for you as a person.
And you said this in a different context altogether, but I want to wrap up the conversation with a message for hiring managers who are looking to make a difference in this AI kind of world. They are human resource people at the end of the day. We have to remember that. What would you say to them to start doing today and stop doing today?
So I have a theory for which we are sort of pushing that forward. So everybody looks at time to hire, right? And I think that's a very, very loosely used term, and everybody tracks it. I think it's critical, right? In my view, I think it's so critical that I've given a mandate to my team that, hey, if pizzas can be delivered in 30 minutes, why can't we actually have 30 relevant candidates in 30 minutes, within 30 kilometers of the opening, right? Can our platform enable that if we have that, right?
Right.
But I think where we miss is the quality of hire. And it is the most difficult, I would say, thing to evaluate. Mm-hmm. But that is something that we definitely need today. Yeah. And it has to be done.
Our hiring managers are supremely delighted, and they will be even more delighted to hear that some of them, whoever attends the NHRDN National Conference end of June, might be able to see some of Unstop's work in play over there, seeing as I should tell everybody that Unstop is the assessment partner, pro bono, by the way, for the Professor Ram Charan Awards. And the winners are going to be felicitated by Professor Ram Charan and Dr. CJK, who is the CHRO of L&T and also president of the NHRD network. And this is going to be an opportunity to perhaps see some of Unstop's work and impact, I would imagine, in the real world. So that's coming soon for everybody. But some things need to stop. This podcast will stop, but the thinking hopefully will carry on, because it is unstoppable in many ways, as Ankit summarizes it. Thank you so much, Ankit. It's been lovely catching up with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. No, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting. Pleasure.
This episode is brought to you by Zing HR. You are listening to the NHRD podcast. NHRD, a national HRD network, India's largest network for HR professionals.